Listening Library presents Boots on the Ground, America's War in Vietnam, by Elizabeth Partridge. Read for you by Ray Porter and Elizabeth Partridge.
This is the author, Elizabeth Partridge. A note about language. There are offensive words in some quoted material in this book, particularly racial slurs that were meant to denigrate and be hurtful. Though these derogatory words are no less offensive today, I have not censored them. They are important for understanding the Vietnam War, its era, and the intense memories and feelings of several of my interviewees. For Tom Ratcliffe. Prologue. November 1968. As soon as the hitchhiker climbed into the back seat next to me, I was sorry we had picked him up. Standing by the road in a coat and hat, he'd looked like one of us, a teenager heading out of town Friday night, away from parents and school. But inches away, he felt tense and vigilant. He reminded me of a cougar, muscles taut, ready to spring. John and Warren in front laughed over a joke as we sped onto the freeway. We were headed for John's family cabin in the mountains, and we could get the hitchhiker halfway to Reno, Nevada, where he was headed. He adjusted the heavy duffel bag on his lap and pulled off his knit hat. His hair was short, military short. "Where are you coming from?" asked John, glancing in the rearview mirror. Warren turned around, took one startled look at the hitchhiker's short hair, and swung back. "Nam," the hitchhiker said. He looked at us warily, taking in our love beads and John's and Warren's long hair. "Nam?" asked John. There was a long pause. "I'm a Green Beret," the hitchhiker finally said. "Been in Vietnam a year." Vietnam. It was like a concussion grenade smashed against the windshield and ricocheted back through the car. The Vietnam War. It was stalking us all. We were high school seniors, and the clock was ticking. Once out of high school, all American males faced 2 years of compulsory military service. When they turned 18, men had to register with the Selective Service System, the agency responsible for implementing a draft. With thousands of soldiers being sent to Vietnam, there were not enough volunteers for the military to meet troop needs. We watched anxiously as people we knew were drafted into the Army. It didn't matter whether they volunteered or were drafted. If they were ordered to Vietnam, they would be there for 12 months. 3 years earlier, President Lyndon B. Johnson had sent troops to aid the South Vietnamese government in its fight against the communist North Vietnamese. Every night on the news, we watched footage of battles. The sound of machine gun fire and exploding bombs reverberated off our living room walls. Villagers ran from combat clutching small children as news anchors reported ever-growing numbers of Americans killed in action. It was horrible to watch, but impossible not to. Warren, John, and I went to Berkeley High School in California. We were in the West Coast epicenter of the military as they shipped men and equipment across the Pacific to Vietnam. The San Francisco Bay Area was a constant flashpoint for demonstrations and marches against the war. I was a dreamy, bookish girl, not inclined to politics and protest. But the war made me feel desperate, and I wanted it to end. All I could do was join the street protests, add my body to the crowd. We didn't mix, those of us against the war and the guys who came back from Vietnam. And now I was sitting next to someone just out of Vietnam, fresh from his job to kill or be killed. I pulled away from him, moved closer to my window. What had he seen in Vietnam? What had he done? It was a long, awkward drive. We didn't ask him any questions, and he volunteered nothing. When we finally arrived at the cabin, it was past midnight with a heavy, wet snow falling. We couldn't leave him by the side of the road and invited him in for the night. He sat in the corner of the kitchen as we made a late meal. He was perfectly still except his eyes, which flicked from the door to the dark windows to our faces and back to the door. I couldn't shake the feeling that if some perceived danger set him off, he was ready to spring. He slept on the living room floor, rolled in a blanket. When we woke up in the morning, he was gone. After graduation, John enrolled in college, which deferred his military service. Warren was ordered by the Selective Service, the agency in charge of the draft, to report for his physical. He was given a medical deferment for the braces he wore on his teeth and told to report back in a year. I started college at nearby UC Berkeley, where my life was a mixture of anti-war rallies and marches and beginning French and rhetoric classes. Men were still being drafted, and Americans and Vietnamese were dying. Why couldn't we, or wouldn't we, get out of Vietnam? A lot of protesters wanted to know the same thing. Peaceful gatherings became violent as frustrated demonstrators threw rocks and bottles, even started fires. I hated being in the middle of the unruly, angry crowds. Policemen and the National Guard retaliated with tear gas, helicopters, and bullets. How had we come to this, where violence was used to protest violence? I went to more classes and fewer protests until I steered clear of demonstrations completely. But conflict was unavoidable. As I came out of class one day, a helicopter swept over campus and released a wide arc of tear gas meant for a nearby rally. I ran blindly back into the building, coughing and choking, my lungs and eyes on fire. Our country had irrevocably split in two, those for the war and those against. In April 1975, the North Vietnamese communists swept down through South Vietnam, heading for the capital, Saigon. On April 23rd, President Gerald R. Ford announced the war was finished as far as America was concerned. 5 days later, as North Vietnamese troops encircled Saigon, Ford ordered the evacuation of all United States citizens from Vietnam. Helicopters plucked the last desperate Americans from the roof of the embassy. More than 1 million Americans had served in combat or in at-risk support teams in Vietnam. There had been no parades, no celebrations to welcome anyone home. Those who'd served in Vietnam kept their heads down and did their best to readjust privately to civilian life. Like most Americans whose lives were not directly touched by the war, I put it behind me and went on with my life. I was just relieved the fighting was over. A few years ago, I visited Washington, D.C. Our complicated military involvement in the Middle East made me think once again about the dark, divisive days of the Vietnam War. I walked over to the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, the Wall, near the Lincoln Memorial. Late afternoon sunlight slanted through the trees. It was chilly, and few people were in the park. The memorial emerged out of the grass. Then, as I walked alongside, it rose higher and higher still. 57,939 American names were inscribed on it in 1982 when it was dedicated, arranged by casualty date, the day the person was killed, or sustained wounds that led to death. I ran my fingers over the tiny chiseled letters. So many dead. Buddies who died together, now clustered together, forever in the granite. 57,939 is an abstract number, but name after name under my fingertips was not. How had this happened? That we've been drawn deeper and deeper into the war at such great cost. So many lives lost, both Americans and Vietnamese. A young man with an open face came up to me. "Could you do me a favor?" he asked. He waved his cell phone apologetically. "My grandmother asked me to take a photograph of my grandfather's name," he said. "And my battery's dead." I used my phone.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?